around. As they stared at each other through two windows and through the strange, sulphurous light, she had the feeling that they were making contact across an immense gulf of space and time and destiny. But then, inevitably, her fantasy burst, for he wasn't Danny. Pulling her gaze away from his, she studied her hands, which were gripping the steering wheel so fiercely that they ached. Damn. She was angry with herself. She thought of herself as a tough, competent, level-headed woman who was able to deal with anything life threw at her, and she was disturbed by her continuing inability to accept Danny's death. After the initial shock, after the funeral, she had begun to cope with the trauma. Gradually, day by day, week by week, she had put Danny behind her, with sorrow, with guilt, with tears and much bitterness, but also with firmness and determination. She had taken several steps up in her career during the past year, and she had relied on hard work as a sort of morphine, using it to dull her pain until the wound fully healed. But then, a few weeks ago, she had begun to slip back into the dreadful condition in which she'd wallowed immediately after she'd received news of the accident. Her denial was as resolute as it was irrational. Again, she was possessed by the haunting feeling that her child was alive. Time should have put even more distance between her and the anguish, but instead the passing days were bringing her around full circle in her grief. This boy in the station wagon was not the first that she had imagined was Danny. In recent weeks, she had seen her lost son in other cars, in schoolyards past which she had been driving, on public streets, in a movie theater. Also, she'd recently been plagued by a repeating dream in which Danny was alive. Each time, for a few hours after she woke, she could not face reality. She half convinced herself that the dream was a premonition of Danny's eventual return to her, that somehow he had survived and would be coming back into her arms one day soon. This was a warm and wonderful fantasy, but she could not sustain it for long. Though she always resisted the grim truth, it gradually exerted itself every time, and she was repeatedly brought down hard, forced to accept that the dream was not a premonition. Nevertheless, she knew that when she had the dream again, she would find new hope in it as she had so many times before, and that was not good. Sick, she berated herself. She glanced at the station wagon and saw that the boy was still staring at her. She glared at her tightly clenched hands again and found the strength to break her grip on the steering wheel. Grief could drive a person crazy. She'd heard that said, and she believed it. But she wasn't going to allow such a thing to happen to her. She would be sufficiently tough on herself to stay in touch with reality, as unpleasant as reality might be. She couldn't allow herself to hope. She had loved Danny with all her heart, but he was gone. Torn and crushed in a bus accident with 14 other little boys, just one victim of a larger tragedy. Battered beyond recognition, dead, cold, decaying, in a coffin, under the ground, forever. Her lower lip trembled. She wanted to cry, needed to cry, but she didn't. The boy in the Chevy had lost interest in her. He was staring at the front of the grocery store again, waiting. Tina got out of her Honda. The night was pleasantly cool and desert dry. She took a deep breath and went into the market, where the air was so cold that it pierced her bones, and where the harsh, fluorescent lighting was too bright and too bleak to encourage fantasies. She bought a quart of non-fat milk and a loaf of whole wheat bread that was cut thin for dieters, so each serving contained only half the calories of an ordinary slice of bread. She wasn't a dancer anymore. Now she worked behind the curtain, in the production end of the show, but she still felt physically and psychologically best when she weighed no more than she had weighed when she'd been a performer. 5 minutes later, she was home. Hers was a modest ranch house in a quiet neighborhood. The olive trees and lacy melaleucas stirred lazily in a faint Mojave breeze. In the kitchen, she toasted two pieces of bread. She spread a thin skin of peanut butter on them, poured a glass of non-fat milk,